following podcast is going to have explicit humor, probably some cuss words, but it's still going to be a lot of fun.
Renaissance Recall with Jim Miller is part of Gray Towers Productions.
Ha! Jamboree! Ha! Jamboree! Ha! You ringtail sailors coming up behind! Ha! Jamboree! Ha! Jamboree! Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm. Now, me lads, be of good cheer.
Okay. And I can adjust for it later. But welcome to Renaissance Recall. My name is Jim Miller. I'm going to be your host for this afternoon. And we are, you're going to be hearing a lot of stuff in the background because we are actually at the Virginia Renaissance site. We are at the wonderful location, which is called the Northwest South.
The Company
of the Northwest South.
A good and honorable company.
And so we are on site at the Virginia Renaissance Fair, and we have two amazingly wonderful people, and I'm going to have them introduce themselves, and we'll start with...
I'm Bradley Howard.
I'm Brian Wendell Morton.
And these are two of the wonderful people that do our singing and our acting and some of our magic, all of these wonderful little things that you get to pick up at the Virginia Renaissance Fair. And I decided we were going to record tonight. We're going to try this out. We're hoping that this recording is going to go well. So hopefully I can try to get this up by Monday. So the people in the future who get this on Monday. But you guys understand the kind of the concept. So we don't try to... We just interview you because we want to get to know you, not your characters.
Right.
To get you know how you got into this. So let's start with some basic ones. Who do you guys play?
I play Fletcher Tiberius Moon. I'm a pirate captain, a bon vivant, bastard, an all-around swell guy. I'm also a tavern keeper and beer splainer. It's what I do. I drink beer, and I know things about beer. It's pretty much... I've wasted my life. You realize this?
This is not a wasted life. You're sharing this information with the rest of us.
Oh, did I say waste? I'm sorry. I keep forgetting. No. It's been a good life. Who are you again?
Oh, God. Oh. Brian,
we've known each other in the Renaissance world a very long time, James.
Oh, God. And as that is a moment of... I met... Oh, God. Mr. Howard. I met you literally in 90-ish.
The Clinton administration.
Yes. When I was volunteering at the Jacob's Ladder.
Yep.
I paid to get in, and I volunteered all day at the Jacob's Ladder because that was the best entertainment I'd had.
I remember that. That was an old town. Old town. Rebel Grove.
It was... And I met you the same year.
Wow. So I play expatriate Spanish Moor, Diego Natividad de la Estafa, which nobody can say, they call me Dinty the Moor. I'm sorry. I wrote that. I'll never live it down myself.
Brilliance.
And you could say I do a magic act, but I basically just say I tell a lot of lies.
Which is also accurate. Yeah.
And so I guess you meant my first year performing was at Rebel Grove in Maryland in 1999.
Yeah, I'd only been there for a couple years.
And and it's been 21 years straight through to this point. As the Pirates Royale would say, I have made many bad choices.
So we have the character. So we normally ask you the question, very specifically. How did you get? I would say how did you join Ren Fairs? But most of the time, I'm finding out that people trick other people into getting Ren Fairs. But I want to know how did you two gentlemen get into working in the Renaissance and being reenactors and so on and so forth?
State of Maryland issued me a driver's license at the age of 16. And I lived 120 miles from the Maryland Renaissance Festival. It was in Columbia in those days.
Oh,
and the moment I could get my ass there. I did it. And I immediately fell in love with the whole culture, everything about it. And it was 85, 84 when I auditioned, and and I've been working Ren Faire ever since.
Wow.
Mine is, see, one of the standard jokes in magic is, how do you become a magician? I was tricked into it. Oh. terrible joke. No, my way was kind of roundabout, although there's a small amount of intersection with Brad, because the first person I ever knew who did anything Renaissance hair-wise was a member of the Pirates for Owl, Lynn Cunningham, who played Bosun Peg O'Reilly.
Oh, yeah.
I went to junior high school with Lynn, so I have literally known her since the mid-70s. She tells people I'm the person she pretty much is known longest, who she's still in contact with.
Which is always good, really.
And, well, we are about 18 days apart in age, but she always ages herself up because she said it makes her look better. And I say, no, when you age yourself up, you're aging me up too, lady. So cut it out. But anyway, I remember, to telescope this story a little, I remember being at the University of Maryland and running into a common friend of mine and Lynn's, and I said, have you seen Lynn? And he was like, yeah, she's doing this Renaissance fair thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, what? And then that was the last I thought of that. And then in the late 80s, another buddy of mine, from college, we would go out to Rebel Grove. This was either the first or second year in Crownsville. And basically never made it any further than the first pub that you encounter when you get in the door, which then was Middleton's. And we would basically paid mud beggars to throw themselves at women's feet and embarrass them. Then
like you do. That's a hobby.
Ren Faires are so strange.
I met somebody else I knew from junior high school, the younger sister of my first assistant when I got into magic. I got into magic when I was in junior high school. So I've been doing magic for 46 years now.
You can't see it, but he's doing magic right now.
In my pants.
Was that an explicit comment? We're not sure. We're going to ask him later.
It was that kind of a podcast.
So I ran into Lauren Muni, who was in an act then called Whiplash.
Yep.
With her partner, Jim Frank.
Yay.
And Lauren was the younger sister of Julia Muni, who was my first magic assistant. It's a very, very small world.
After all.
And so I went out to dinner with Lauren and Jim, and I was like, well, how do y'all, wind up doing this sort of thing? And chatted for a while. And I then was working for, believe it or not, the Clinton administration. I was working in the White House.
bing, 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 bing,
which
bing,
is bing. Virtually impossible to work a Renaissance fair and have a political job at that level.
Yeah, they don't cross
and,
over well.
But I was getting to the end of my rope, so to speak. I mean, not to inject politics in this, but there was a woman who worked for Ronald Reagan who wrote a book called What I Saw at the Revolution. And she said there are three stages of working for any White House. Stage one is, look, here I am, and look at all these smart people running the country. The second stage is, here I am, one of these smart people running the country. The third stage is, here I am, and oh my God, look at these idiots running the country. And when you get to the third stage, it's probably time to go.
Probably time to go.
And I had gotten to the third stage, and so I left that job for another job that gave me the freedom to have a life and weekends. And the first thing I did was I went to a bar in my neighborhood. I said, can I get some people together, run a videotape, and put together an audition? And I sent that to the entertainment director of Maryland. And so 99 was my first year. I was just purely a street performer, walking around doing like card tricks at people. The next year they gave me a stage act, and here we are now.
Downhill from there.
Yeah. Long downhill slide.
We get so much assistance in the momentum in the beginning, and then suddenly it was like, we look back and you're like, where's our people pushing? We're still going down. Oh, okay, I'll do this.
Such as a man falls down a very long hill. And you know what they say, it's not the long fall, it's a sudden stop
at the bottom.
Planning, forethought.
That's what it takes. These are tools of our trade we do not know of. Oh, gosh. So, besides Ren Faire's and besides your characters here, did you do any other acting in school or, like, college or private theater training?
My parents, God bless them, were pretty indulgent to their weird little son.
Like you are. Like you do.
As one does. Well, as I does.
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 As I does. As I does.
So, I took stages any chance I got, and of course in school, I loved to act, I loved to sing, and I was a band Wally, too. So
I'm thrown because I probably don't know the term properly.
Okay. Band-wally. I went to band camp and our band were champions. I was one of those kids.
We are the champ. No, I get you.
Yeah, and that's where I learned appreciation for ensemble work. I've always acted out in some fashion. So the Ren Faire was the thing for me.
There was acting, whether it was in or out. We weren't sure yet.
Acting up. Let's see. I grew up all over the world. My parents were career diplomats.
True story.
And when we came back to the United States, I was in ninth grade, which was the absolute worst year to return to the States. And so I was immediately marginalized with all the rest of the nerds. All those nerds were the theater kids. Or as they so kindly referred to us in 1975, the drama fags. Thespians, if you were really being nice about it.
Tremestibians.
And
in college, I experimented with that.
And so, ninth grade, we did The Mouse That Roared.
Nice.
I actually had the Peter Sellers role.
Nice.
And in high school, I did Man Who Came to Dinner, and I was Banjo, which was Jimmy Durante in the movie. And then senior year, I was Benny South Street in Guys and Dolls.
Right on. Another nice. Cool
and
show.
And so that was the extent of my theater experience, my stage experience, along with magic, which is an allied art in a way, because the great French magician that Houdini got his name from, Jean-Eugène Robert Houdin, used to say that a magician is an actor playing the part of magician. And so there are a whole bunch of allied skills. You have to have internal monologues. You have to basically be convincing an audience of the thing that you're convincing yourself. So there's a lot of things that magic has in common with the acting and theater.
That makes a lot of sense.
To say that Brian, from the first time I saw him, I've always admired his craft because he's very, very slick. I'm not one of these people who thinks magic is magic. It's a skill. It's an illusion. And I'm okay with that. It drove me nuts when Fox ran like 5 concurrent series that uncovered magic. What? They're not really doing it? I don't give a shit about that.
And nobody remembers that putz anymore either.
Yeah, right? give me an illusionist who makes me forget.
You've got to be drawn in.
I've
it's
seen
a story.
Him do a series of tricks that I've seen him do over and over again. And every time I get that wow thing.
Get dragged in.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And because the world is really small, I need to tell the world that another thing that Brad and I have in common, because I had known Brad for the first few years of Sayre, but then we did Watergate the Musical.
Oh, my God, yes.
Wait,
that was the last stage work I did.
Ditto.
Oh, my. Watergate the Musical.
Yes.
Please continue. It just took me a moment to get myself in that right
so,
mind frame.
So, one of the performers at the Maryland Fair is the lovely and beautiful and talented and very smart Sibel Pomeroy, who is Mimi the Mime. Most people see her
the beloved Mimi the Mime
in, you know, her colorful mime outfit, but what they do not know is she's an amazing writer.
Oh my God, yes.
And she was obsessed with Watergate. And so she bought almost every biography and autobiography
she
of every one of the Watergate principals. Mm-hmm. And so she took this mishmash of all their stories, put them together, then wrote lyrics, found a guy who wrote music, set the music to the lyrics. Oh.
How many were on the cast? Do you remember?
Oh, 2,000 or 3,000, it seemed.
Yeah.
Sibel sort of like felt that she was going to write the next Music Man. She wanted this show to go to Broadway and then a community theater. And like the Music Man, it would like have everybody on the stage at once. So she wrote a part for just about everybody in Washington, D.C.
It was glorious.
In this
it was
show.
Fucking glorious. It was
fantastic. It suffered from overreach, but it was still kind of an amazing show. There were a lot of Renaissance Air performers in the show.
Oh, God.
I was a singing, dancing, juggling Cuban Watergate burglar.
Right.
And Brad here, of course, was G. Gordon Liddy.
G. Gordon Liddy himself.
Who had a magnificent number before he goes away to prison called "Good Night, Mrs. Goodbye, Mrs. Liddy," in which he did a strip tease down to his American flag boxers, and the cheers that got were so loud that we could hear them backstage through two sets of cinder block walls.
Wow,
oh, Mrs. Liddy. I did my job today, but there's a price to pay for freedom. Oh my God, it was so much fun.
Oh.
And I brought the Stars and Stripes, the boxer shorts to it because I thought, yeah, he would certainly wear those.
Yeah.
But I also brought, and I was very proud of this, to hold up my black socks on my black Oxfords. I had black sock suspenders.
Sock garters. Nothing says comedy like sock garters.
You know Liddy had to have worn those from the G-Man days.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite was the show when you did the striptease. You took your pants and you slung them around and sling them off backstage.
So much fun with that. Oh, my God.
And he missed the backstage part by just a little. And so he had to sneak around and quietly drag his pants off stage.
Oh my gosh. The thing is I can picture you doing that because you remember you did voices and videos for Civilization.
Oh yeah, Civ 2. That's, as Andy Warhol coined, that was my 15 minutes. That was my official 15 minutes.
You and a couple other actors, some of we know from Fair, some of we didn't.
Spencer.
And I started laughing because I turned around and it was like, show all the videos from Civilization 2. And I was like, oh, okay, I've wanted to play this game. So I start playing it, and all of a sudden, Brad pops up on my screen and goes, they're coming after us, sir. What? Just, I was like, wait, what's this? Am I getting punked? Did they just like pop out of the computer or just like... I'm getting attacked and Brad's leading them. What's going? So I'm sitting there like circling around and I'm like, I have no idea what just happened. So I kept playing. And then all of a sudden Spencer pops in. It's like, Yes, sir. It was like a political, like, assistant, advisor who would pop in.
For your listeners, you're referring to Spencer Humm, who was one half of Hack and Slash, the act that went around for years and years.
He did his separate show for a while, right? And now he still does stuff, but I think he's in Florida now. But while I was sitting there and I was laughing about that, but I saw you and you cut a dashing figure in your uniforms and everything else, and I'm going, oh gosh, now I can imagine him in the flag boxer shorts and the black shoes, the black Oxford, swinging just like these pants around.
Here's the
and...
creepy thing.
Thanks for time, prefacing.
Yes. At that time, I was 39, I think. Which was the age of G. Gordon Liddy when the whole thing happened. If you look at photographs of him from the 60s when he was a G-man, he looks exactly like my father. And when you play a role, you try and... Well, me anyway.
We all have our method.
I've never been a wizard. I've never been formally trained as a wizard, but I pretend to be a wizard.
So you've never been a convicted felon.
I try to be... Wait, no.
I just play one.
On TV.
Anyway,
something.
Where was I? Anyway, I had to find something about Liddy that I could bond with. Yeah. And the one thing that impressed me over all, because I think what he did was despicable, and I think it was treacherous, and he got what he deserved. But he truly did it for his country. Everything he did for his country. So that was the thing that I latched on to when I played him. And
there was a passion there. There was a real passion.
Yeah. You have to admire that, not how he went about it or what his motivations were. Well, his motivation was right, because it was about America. And, I could identify with that.
And when we all take on characters, especially with you and Duncan Hines, which makes me crack up every time.
Told the joke where I got around to it. Oh, well.
No, I whispered it, so we're trying to... No. But with slow build-up.
Oh, okay.
But all of us have that... we find something about our particular character that we really latch on to, and then we just kind of build the character around it in layers and just hope it happens. Right. And then we find these amazing characters in ourselves where we're just like, wow, people really like that. People like that person. They really enjoyed that. They
My favorite
so
characters
hard.
To play are bastards and scoundrels and sociopaths. Love to play sociopaths.
Everybody loves a good sociopath.
Who doesn't?
Love a good sociopath. Oh, gosh.
One of the things Brad and I have also done is part of the way we wound up into Watergate the Musical was through another friend of ours, a colleague, C.J. Crow, who used to be the operations manager of the Maryland Renaissance.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And she has her own... years before my time, but she has her own murder mystery company called Do or Die.
And it and it is, hands down, the most brilliant company of that sort, honestly.
She's gathered together a bunch of players who... I mean, I had never thought about... you know, improv murder mysteries, but she'd seen my work at the festival, and she's, would you like to come join the company of Do or Die? And I was like, sure.
Would you like to go do this? Yeah, sure.
And so, basically, people hire Do or Die, and occasionally they get their own theater gigs, and they come in, and it's sort of a takeover. There are these plot lines... one of the great things I love about CJ and her shows is something like, there's no joke too low. We'll always go for the cheap joke.
Yep. It's all in some the delivery.
The character names. There was one show where the guy who got killed in the show, his name was Dick Smack. And so there's a Christmas show that is one of the evergreens. It's called Sleigh Ride, Slay.
Uh-huh.
And one of the characters is Stocky Zarhung. So, yeah, so this is sort of gives you an idea into the world.
A cop that would show up in most of the stories was just in case.
Hey, just in case. And
so I remember we were sitting around doing one show, and I just turned her and I said, "You need to do a show with a magician called Poof, You're Dead." And she wheels and turns to me. She goes, "I'm going to write that show." 2 years later, she calls me up. She goes, "I've just cast you and Poof, You're Dead."
Awesome.
And there's another very talented Renaissance Festival actor. He's now he is jointly in a musical act, and he's also in Renaissance Rumble, which is, I'm talking about John Kelso, who is
John Kelso. A
pianist, and he plays the ocarina. Is just far too much talent for one human being.
Comes out of him in droves.
And he knows how to fix steam engines.
Yes.
honestly, he does know. He used
He's
to fix.
Talked about it.
He worked
to
for
fix Jay Leno's
cars. And
we have the weirdest hobbies.
Kelso is in Renaissance Rumble, which is a Shakespearean like pro wrestling act. But Kelso was in Poof, You're Dead with me, where he was this apprentice, and I would come on and be trying to be a normal serious magician. He would leap out of the wings while humming, you know, Europa's The Final Countdown. So I'd be there, "Hi, good evening," and suddenly he's, and he'd run in with this cape around him and like do this big ta-da, and I would look at him like, "What the hell are you doing?" So it gives you a little idea of the sort of things that we'd get up to in Do or Die.
Oh my gosh.
And so they cast a lot of Watergate the Musical out of the Do or Die company.
Yeah, because the show was directed by our boss at Do or Die.
Yeah, CJ directed it. Sibel wrote it, and there had to have been about 50 people in this cast.
Oh, jeez.
For a while, I was joking that it was probably more fun for us to act in than it was for you to watch, but. exactly.
CJ's amazing. She's a brilliant writer. She's an excellent motivator. Isn't that a good word?
Yeah. She teaches improv. She's literally written a book on improv performing.
Her direction is amazing.
It's a direction.
It's an actual direction. Yeah. Love working with her. And funny as hell.
Going down parts of just hearing some of the fun things that you guys and having you guys do those experiences from another point of view, because I met Kelso, I met a bunch of Renaissance Rumble, and when they were just doing Militia or they were just doing Fight Cast and just thinking back that it's been 20 some years since we met.
Yeah, right? Right?
Yeah.
Time, how it flies.
I remember
time?
My first 10 years, I thought, wow, what? This is epic. I've been doing this for a decade.
I
remember the 20th anniversary was like, wow, I've been doing this for 20 years.
That was last year for me.
A couple years back.
30 years? Yeah, I've been doing this for 30
years.
30 years? Yeah. Yep.
You know what they say a career is? It's a job that's gone on way
too long. Oh, gosh.
I wouldn't have it any other way, though, because it's not just a fantastic job, but it's a community. It's a real... You find you find groups like that in other arenas, similar, but Renfair is the grand.
Yeah.
Because all the other circles touch that one. We have common friends who are in other circles, but the commonality is the Renfair. Because Renfair draws a lot of people. A lot of people who are passionate. A lot of people who express themselves, who want to express themselves, who really love it when other people express themselves. It's about communication. It's about contact. It's about intimacy. Something that, you know, we're losing. I sound like my father now. But,
years ago.
Yeah, we're, no, and we're losing that.
That's very understanding because there's a couple of groups specifically where this happens, and especially like in actors and performers and things like that.
Yeah.
If you've heard anything about voice actors, you can't be a jerky voice actor.
Yeah.
Because everybody else in that room is going to look at you, or in the recording room, because a lot of them are being recorded individually now, which I think loses something.
Yeah.
Because all of them should be in the room together, and you get more
ensemble
energy that way.
Yeah.
But we're one of those groups where movie actors, theater actors, practice, 2 to 3 hours. That's your performance. Movie actors, practice, days of recording, and you end up with 2 or 3 good hours of performing. Voice actors, they could do 16 different stories in an hour. Just reading off their things and being impassioned and everything. Reenactors, we act for 8 to 10 hours a day in surround.
That's part of my pedigree.
I
come from reenactors, too.
Look at it and you go, oh, well, I acted in Shakespeare. I was Shakespeare. For 8 hours a day, for 10 days straight, I was
wore
Shakespeare.
Those goddamn pumpkin pants.
because it's one of those things where you have to be able to turn it on and you have to hold it on. And there's not a lot of chances where you've got to turn it off. And in a lot of cases, if you do turn it off, suddenly you feel bad about turning it off for a second and you got to turn it back on.
Right.
But we're doing theater in the round.
In some regards, I live different lives as a magician because it's all of that in the Renaissance environment. You go in and you're on for your 8 hours or whatnot.
Yeah.
I've discovered in recent years I'm kind of an invisible man in the magic community because for the most part, most of my performing is I like to joke is doing card tricks and funny clothes in the woods.
it's
nobody else, the number of magicians who perform in the Renaissance circuit is actually rather small compared to the number of magicians out in the actual, you know, world of theatrical performance.
The real
world. And so I go occasionally, not often, but I go occasionally to magic conferences and such, and nobody knows who I am. And it's changed a little in recent years just because... there was a magic shop owner in Baltimore named Denny Haney, now the late Denny Haney. He passed away this past January of cancer, which is a shame because he was a longtime top professional performer. He made lots of money. He, you know, sort of created the college magic circuit and then moved on to corporate gigs where he was making, you know, 5 figures for one event alone, making cars appear for GM and such.
He used to do stuff for, like, schools. He used to occasionally go around the schools and do stuff.
And,
where I know him from.
He had a magic shop in the outskirts of Baltimore. Mm. And he knew everybody. Everybody knew him. He knew everybody. And I remember walking into a shop one time. And he goes, "Hey man, I'm hearing pretty good things about you." And that was like the highest praise for me because nobody I knew in magic. Every now and then, I might get somebody who would come out to the show. I remember walking out on my show at the Lyric Stage at Rebel Grove, and looking in my audience, and I'm seeing George Gilbert, who is one of the top street performer magicians in America. And sitting next to him is Gazzo, who was one of my inspirations.
Yeah.
And this is terrifying. Sweet, you know, in Renaissance terms, it's like walking out and like seeing Penn Jillette sitting next to David Copperfield in the front row of your show. Well, can't screw this one up.
I was lying. I'm about to up my game right now.
And so Gazzo has become a very dear friend. When I first started coming to the Renaissance Festival, I remember seeing him. And he's given me advice. And he's actually let me use a couple of jokes, which may even make it into the act this year. Because back in the day, Gazzo was, he was rough. He's
amazing, though. He's amazing at being rough.
He's a charming, you know, I think North London kind of guy. Actually, the act that I do here called Escuela Estafa, the Swindle School show, mm-hmm. where I demonstrate three street cons, both historical and real modern ones, that show more or less came directly out of something that Gazzo did at a magic lecture one. Because when Gazzo was 9 years old as a boy in London, mm-hmm. he wound up being a lookout for the Cracker Parker Monty mob, three-card Monty mob. And this three-card Monty mob, they would set up on a street corner, and they would sort of lure people in to play this game. They'd find somebody who they thought had a lot of money. They would lure him in to play this game and take them for all they were worth, and then sort of send them on their way completely broke. And Gazzo tells this story while he was demonstrating at the end of my Escuela Estafa show. I turned part of the audience into a Monty mob, and that comes direct from Gazzo's lecture, where he showed what he did when he was a child. As a 9-year-old, he was one of the lookouts. But I bring people up, and there's a mark, and then the roper roped in the mark, and then a couple of shills and a couple of lookouts, and the smoother, who in the end, once the person's lost all their money, the smoother's the one who's like, oh, you need to get out of here before the cops get here. And all
cops
of that
are coming.
All of that came from Gazzo and his experience as a kid. And when he tells the story... somebody asked him, well, why did you stop? He goes, I was nine. And he was serious. I was nine, and the mob took this elderly woman for literally her life savings, like 3,500 pounds. A lot of, if you think that's a lot of money now, imagine how much money that was in like 1969.
More like 350,000 pounds.
Yes. Yeah. And the 9-year-old Gazzo went up to Cracker Parker and said, how can you do that? He goes, she was stupid enough to play. And he's like, I have a conscience. I couldn't do that.
Ethics.
And so Gazzo then wound up apprenticing himself to one of the greatest unknown underground sleight of hand magicians in England, Sir Walter Scott. There's a book about it. Where Gazzo talks about, you know, all of the stuff that he learned. Unfortunately, at the age of 36, Gazzo is about the same age I am. At the age of 36, he had a stroke.
Oh.
And lost nearly all of the great physical sleight of hand talent that he had. And so he had to basically reinvent himself, which he has done yet again now. Because he used to be really street hard, and he had this sort of like insult humor with a twinkle in his eye.
Oh, yeah.
And now he's sort of going sort of kindly grandfather thing now. So so he's like all the stuff from his hard years. There was this one great joke in his cups and balls routine, and I said, that kind of works for what I'm trying. He's like, it's yours. And that's how wonderful a guy Gazzo is.
Oh. Yeah.
But a stroke at the age of 36, and you have to relearn everything all over again.
I couldn't imagine.
I mean, I enjoyed the adventure the first time, but the second time, it's just like, oh, man. So, here's a question. So, you were with the Pirates Royale for long. You are an amazing singer. We all agree.
He still is. He's not dead yet. Give him a break.
I thought I said so R. Natural. I think I said were. That was an accident. I rent these lips, you hole. Anyway.
I'm looking at him. He's still alive. He's right over there.
He's right over there.
I'm right here. I'm right here, guys.
Maybe stone cold dead in a minute. Anyway, no Python in this.
I feel happy.
So, and you sing your beer show, which is...
Yeah, the culture of beer, yeah.
The culture of beer.
Started doing that here at the illustrious Virginia Renaissance Fair about 12 years ago. Literally, they needed a slot filled. And Bagel, the director at that time, said, Brad, do a show. I thought, yeah, okay, I can do that. But I sang the sea songs with the Pirates Royale, so I wanted to do something different. Mom always said, go with what you know. So I decided to talk about just how fucking fantastic beer is in song and story, and why we should all, even if a person does not enjoy beer, even if a person does not like beer, they should at least appreciate the pedigree of beer.
Because a lot of history.
I've watched you sort of create that show and shepherd that show over the years, and it is fascinating. Brad has basically delved into the brewing culture, and you don't realize how much of it is also history, you know.
Oh, yeah.
History
oh, yeah.
of England, history of measurement.
Yeah. History.
The difference between, you know, a pint and an imperial pint. Things like that, that you don't really think about.
And why there's an imperial pint, and why there's a French pint, and why, yeah.
It's the French.
and our lexicon has been embiggened with fabulous words that came from the brewing. Buttload.
Buttload.
A buttload is actually a measurement. That's 864 pints of beer. That's a buttload of beer.
That explains a lot.
A shit ton of beer is twice that.
That's with a P, by the way.
Yes.
Ship
yeah.
ton, not a...
Ship ton.
Ship but, ton.
Yeah, we dropped the P. And we still use that word, but who knows that came from beer? Fucking no one! And that's why I do my show. I call it the Gospel of Beer.
Oh, God.
People need to know this. We owe our being a surviving species to beer because we were on our way out. We didn't have fur. We didn't have claws. Our teeth are, come on, look at them. No fangs. We were food. We were food, but we were given brains, and we figured out beer was a good thing to make and live off of. This is easy. And we did this in greater number and greater number, and suddenly we needed to make more beer, and we needed to acquire land and plant and stop wandering the fuck around. Fuck finding food. We're gonna fucking make beer. So our very survival, we owe to beer.
It's true.
Civilization, we owe to beer, because this is why we started an agrarian lifestyle. This is why we started commodities trading. This is when we started to become just a tiny bit less xenophobic. We still have a long way to go. But this is when communities, you know, because we had a product, they had a product, maybe we can trade. And beer was one of the first great commodities that did this. So
all through history,
it saved our lives. It brought us civilization, the third thing. Inebriation. Fucking brilliant. Fucking brilliant.
We bested yeast. It's a dumb single-celled organism, does nothing but eat. It's just like your brother-in-law.
We harnessed that motherfucker. He works on our farm now. Yeast.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so, you know, the passion that I feel for beer, and this man has the same passion for it, because we talk about beer a lot. We talk a lot about the brewing culture. We talk about the history a lot.
I served as a brewery tour guide at Heavy Seas Brewing for 9 years.
Wonderful tour. It was a wonderful tour.
One of the things, since we're in the camp at night, which they may not know. They might think we're still in the... It's like, no, we're on Renfair. We're actually there. At Northwest South.
at Northwest South Company, a good and
honorable company.
But in the tent, the man needs a beer.
Oh, hey.
Pull. Yeah. Since we're talking about beer, might as well drink some product. Yes.
Well, the youngsters talk a lot about it. I'm looking forward to this.
Oh,
God. Listen to that.
Okay. The lovely Vesper Holly serving us.
Very welcome. Thank you.
Oh, that was a beautiful sound. Beautiful noise.
Oh, the aroma. This is when I was 8 years old, I had my first taste of beer. It is one of my favorite memories because it involved Dad. It was a Norman Rockwell moment, probably one of his darker paintings, but it was a summer day, and we were in the backyard, and I was standing next to Dad. Dad was in front of the grill, and he was grilling, and he had a Natty Bow in his hand.
Natty Bow.
He had a Natty Bow in his hand, and Dad
from
always
the land
had
of pleasant living.
National beer. We bring you national beer.
Which was taken over by...
It's G. Heilman now, I believe.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
So,
because they used to have a place out by 695.
Yeah, right.
And then Colt 45 took over.
Malt liquor.
Malt liquor. And then now it's a
trucking company right there now. They took everything down.
It's a sprinkler and pipe company. I'm not going to say the name over
there. It's a glorious building.
Yeah,
cool building. So anyway, I asked Dad, what's beer taste like? And he looked to the right, and he looked to the left, and he bent down, and he handed me the can and said, "Don't tell your mother." So cute, so adorable.
Because that's
anyway,
that's the Rockefeller thing.
I had a beer, and I tasted it. And at first, I didn't know if I liked it, because an 8-year-old boy... We're hardwired for this. We put everything in our mouths. We eat dirt, bugs, because, I did anyway.
Elmer's Glue. There's always Elmer's
Glue. So I had tasted lots of things, and lots of things were similar to other things. There was always a commonality, but beer, this was the first time I tasted anything that was, in and of itself, unique. And I didn't know if I liked it or not. So Dad said, "Do you like it?" And I said, "I don't know." He went to take it from me, and I immediately went and guzzled it. And he let me, and he waited until I finished. He said, "Well, do you like it now?" And I smiled, and I said, "Yes. Yes, I do." And he said, "Great. You'll be able to enjoy that in a few years." Yoink! So thank you, Dad, and thank you, National Bohemian, for giving me my first taste of beer. And
oh gosh,
it still remains to be a highly unique institution. Beer,
flavored institution.
Beer. It's even better now than it was, and it was really fucking good.
One of my traditions beer. Whenever I perform anywhere, I opened it at. The Birchmere for Leon Redbone.
Mm.
And I go in there and they go, "You want to do a sound check?" Now, I'm a magician, so sound check for me is about as fast as it would be for, I don't know, a stand-up comedian or something. So I basically go up there and I recite beer labels. They go, "Okay, you know, your mic's on, give us a check." And I go, "This is the famous Budweiser beer. We know of no brand produced by any of the brewer." You do that. "We know of no brand produced by any of the brewer which costs so much to brew and age. Our exclusive Beechwood aging to produce is a taste, a smoothness, and a drinkability you will find in no other beer at any price." Which, that was a game when I was in college. You had to memorize the Bud label. You would hold the beer in front of you, and you would read it to yourself, and then you had to hold the beer can behind you and recite as much as you could from memory. It took me 6 tries.
You did this in college.
Some years later, I was at a Preakness party,
across the street from Pimlico for the Preakness.
Say no more about that one.
It was, I was working in broadcasting then, and Frank Bond, who was on television in Channel 9 in Washington, D.C., lived across from Pimlico. And so rather than rent out his lawn like all of his neighbors did for Pimlico to make large amounts of money, he would invite all these people he knew from media. And so I went, and I wasn't about to go to the track. I didn't really care about it. And I remember telling somebody about my Budweiser story, and they go, "You didn't do that." And I said, "Oh, yeah." And I reached into a cooler and grabbed a Rolling Rock. And I looked at the label for a little, and I held it behind my back. And I memorized this, mind you, in 1991. "From the glass-lined tanks of old Latrobe, we tended this premium beer for your enjoyment as a tribute to your good taste. It comes from the mountain springs to you, 33. Proving that once something lands in my head, it will stay there for a ridiculously long time." Yes. So, between both of those beer labels, if they can't get a sound check on me by the time I've recited the Bud label and the Rolling Rock label, something's very wrong.
Oh, God.
And then, like it was when we were setting up this podcast, and if we get through...
This was a horrible experience.
If we get through both the Bud label and the Rolling Rock label and they still need a sound check, that's when I go into the script of a card trick that I have that's 8 minutes long. Which you heard a little of the start of this. It's a very film noir script. "It was a hot summer night in the city. How hot? Damn hot. Real hot. It was 110 degrees in the shade, and there was no shade. So hot, the rats were using broken off beer bottles in waiting pools. Just another stinking hot night in the city of Detroit. The 545 train rolled in from Chicago. Two men stepped off. They were the two detectives. One-eyed Jack Hart and his partner Jim Diamond. They're on the trail of a killer."
I think we've spent
accompaniment before.
I think we spent too much time together. Anyway.
Not
nearly enough. There was cuddling involved. Anyway,
And Natty Bo.
Natty Bo and cuddling on this podcast this week. This is gonna be an interesting one. So what did you do for most of the night while I was doing editing? Beep, 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 beep.
Are we at hour six yet?
Hour six.
What are we at? We're actually like 51 minutes. I'm not even worried about. Yeah. So let's ask about a couple things. You guys have both been with the Virginia Fair for a while. In some cases from the beginning. Some cases at the other one. What do you find to be one of your favorite shows here at the fair? Because you're both entertainment professionals. What show...
Man, that is a hard one.
Hard.
Yeah, everyone you name, you piss everybody else.
I know.
No, this is an open educational podcast. I'm sorry, I went into... Put down the patron.
It's finding the brightest light bulb in a field of lamps. I mean, it's... I tell you, a person who I keep going back to because I truly admire the uniqueness of his act and the... intensity that he goes through to stay in character and deliver a purely period stand-up piece, and that's Chris Davis, the Renaissance man. He has a standard that I really admire, and I've always loved his sense of humor, love his timing. Love his eyebrows.
We all like his
huge.
Eyebrows.
They're huge. Yeah, so I'm not going to say he's my favorite because that's a hard question, but he is a person I've always admired greatly.
Well. They're, relatively speaking, they're kind of a new act, but I'm a fan. I've given them advice when they've asked me, and sometimes when they haven't. I like it because, there are lots of singing groups. There are not a lot of acts. And token entertainment, I think they have chosen great musical selections you don't hear from any other, Renaissance musical group. They are two distinct personalities. You've got Griffin Amon and you've got Ree. And they make sense, These are two, you know, travelers coming to look at, you know, exotic foreign England. They turn everything on its head. And I really like that.
They're reenacting the reenactor. Because
I've been portraying Amour since 2003. And part of what I get to do is sort of mock the dominant paradigm. I'm black. Fair. I'm a Spaniard, and I'm surrounded. Back when I used to go to the front gate and welcome people in before my niece said, "Oh, you're gonna walk up and down this 11-degree hill all day," but I would go and I'd say, "You know, welcome to Staffordshire, thousands of xenophobic English and only a few handsome Spanish Moors." I get to mock the established culture, and they do that themselves in their own great way.
Dallas.
And they have some great lines in there, and they're really turning into a great act as opposed to just a musical group.
Yeah, I mean, they're entertainment that happens to have music with it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh gosh.
And you'll be there going, "He didn't say that.
He said that.
Yeah, yeah.
He said that with bells on." Yeah.
Dallas and I were the founders of the Northwest South Company, a good and
honorable company. You might have to explain to them why we say that whenever we do that.
Okay, a history footnote. Fun fact.
Reenactors reenactment.
British East India Company was a... well, they were probably the first great English-speaking plunderers who were an actual business and company, and they didn't have
RICO laws back then.
At one time, they had a larger army and a larger navy than England, and and they wielded entirely too much power, and their motto was a good and honorable company. So they must be, because they told me
they told me they were honorable. They must be honorable.
So, Dallas, where was I going with this? Tangential history.
Northwest Drive.
That was the tangent.
We found the cosine. Dallas, we're on our way.
Dallas's mom is from Korea. Dallas's dad is from West Virginia. Physically, he looks very, very Asian. He loves to play with the dichotomy there. He wants to get a t-shirt made that says "The South will rise again" with a South Korean flag.
Oh God.
He wants to build a car called the General Ree with a South Korean flag on the roof. And with a horn that goes, din, 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 din.
Showbiz, ladies and gentlemen.
It's much funnier. It's much funnier when he tells it.
Well, so how was your political commentary? Never mind. Go ahead. Oh God, that's awesome.
Dallas says stuff on the stage that I think I don't want to be next to you, because they may shoot you and miss and hit me.
There's targeting involved. Let's not.
And you know, you have to admire a guy who can realize that in a smile.
Well, it's Dallas. Oh my gosh. So we'll ask another question. Because we have a lot of people that listen for, you know, questions, how people deal with things. So we ask a question called, "What's on your belt? What do you keep on your belt all day with you?" And it sounds weird sometimes when I say it. Because we've had people who turn around going, "Oh, yeah, I've got my pouch, but I also keep this, this, and this. And now I've added a snake to my kit this year." So,
As one does.
My snake was painted by a friend and his lovely girlfriend. So be that as okay.
Actually, on the belt, I'd say the thing that gets the most use, apart from the opening and closing of the pouch over and over again, you know. And I love my pouch, but it's a two-handed closure thing. And that's just stupid on my part, but I still love that thing. Anyway,
because one hand should be busy.
My favorite thing is my mug hook. That thing is fantastic because I love to talk with my hands. And if I'm finished with my beer, God damn it, I'm not going to hold an empty mug. That just reminds me that I need to get more beer. I'm going to talk with my hands. But I also like to stick a belaying pin in my belt because that's just badass.
And just sometimes you want to walk around with a club on you, really.
Yeah.
Little club, big club, little club.
It's a tool. It's a tool. I'm a tool.
So I have the world's most boring answer to this question because magicians are known for having all sorts of crap on them. And I have literally spent 21 years now trying to strip my act down to the bare minimum so I don't have to carry things. My idea of a great show would be walking out with one playing card, looking at somebody in the front row. Sir, think of a card. Not that card. Think of another card. Keep that in your head. Do 26 minutes of comedy, then turn to the guy at the end. What was the name of that card? He goes, four diamonds. You turn around. Four diamonds. Thank you very much. Good night. That's what I want to carry, but I can't do that.
I saw this guy who he just did the best show. He did this trick. Yeah, did he do anything else?
He talked a lot.
It's like watching a Stephen. It's like watching a Stephen Wright act. He told a bunch of jokes, and I can't remember a single one. I don't. I do my best to carry as little stuff as possible because I don't want to be that guy hauling it up and down that 11-degree hill. however, I can tell you, a couple of years ago when I decided, finally, I'm going to have feast gear. And so I got a bowl, and it came with chopsticks. And I'm like, cool, chopsticks. I'll give you a little history of Dinty the Moor. My first, and this is a tangent, but I'm going somewhere.
Go for it.
When I first started out in 99 at the Maryland Fair, I was Desmond Devereaux, which I thought was really cool until I performed for a while, and I realized what a stupid idea that was. Because, you see, for management to remember you and want to hire you again, they have to hear about you from the patrons.
Yes.
Desmond Devereaux. Think about that. You can't remember it, and if you can remember it, you can't spell it. Now, back in the day, the Maryland Festival had comment cards. They had a big box outside the front gate, and then comment cards, and you had to write, you know, what'd you see, what'd you like, and that sort of thing. And nobody could remember, much less spell, Desmond Devereaux. So I would do this great close-up magic, and in the end, I would look at them and say, my name is Desmond Devereaux. If you can't remember that, just say, I like the black guy, take the magic tricks.
You're doing the full Baltimore, the sword fighting.
Yeah.
The one that sings as a pirate.
Doing the full Baltimore accent. I like the black guy, take the magic tricks. And my final season is Desmond Devereaux, and this was it just worked out this way. The end of the season, Marianne Jung, who is the performance director, would get up and, you know, at cast call and read some of the funniest comment cards they got over the season. And the second to last one, she did that more. She's like, oh, and I got this one. I like the black guy, done the magic tricks. And I'm like, I have succeeded. And then that next winter, I sat up like 3 a.m. in bed in February. Dinty the Moor. Oh my. Okay, how do I get there? Dinty, Dinty, Dinty. Diego, which I love. Zorro, who is Diego de la Vega.
Diego de la Vega.
I was like, Dinty. Okay, so I need NTI, Natividad, which actually is like nativity in Spanish, or birth of. And I was like, okay, Diego, birth of. And I had, and having grown up in Latin America, I had a big, giant, unabridged Spanish-English dictionary on a Bible stand in my room. And so I run over, swindle, fraud, flip, 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 estafa. Perfect. Diego Natividad de Estafa. Bing. There you go. And that's the genesis of that name. However, part of the reason that I did that, I went and visited a very dear friend of mine, a magician who performs at the Bristol Fair, Ivanovich, who has come out here to the Virginia Fair a number of times.
Another very talented magician.
And They had a great performance director, a street cast director at the Bristol Fair named A.E. Shapira. Love you, A.E. And the first year I went out there as Desmond Devereaux, and I introduced myself, and they were all very, very, you know, history, like, serious about it all. And I said, I'm Desmond Devereaux, and she just looked at me, she goes, oh, how shocking. Then I realized, oh, crap, I'm a bastard. You know, it makes no sense for me looking like me in Renaissance England at the time. And I was like, well, what would make sense? Oh, being a Moor. And that percolated in my head for, you know, a few months, and then suddenly, bring Dinty the Moor. And so that's more or less how that came about. And so, and you're wondering how we got there from chopsticks and Ebola. Well, I had chopsticks, and I was thinking, I was like, what would make sense? Why would a Moor have chopsticks? And I'm like, I met a Chinaman on a boat. End of story.
I know that joke. And they rode the boat into a bar.
Yeah. And his name is Ree. Full circle, ladies and gentlemen.
We circled again. Oh, gosh. Oh, gentlemen, this has been a... this has been by far one of the most educational, historical, and entertaining recordings that we've had.
We're sorry, we'll never do it again.
Oh no, more than likely I will catch up with you guys again before the season is over.
We got a million of them.
We've got a million. Let's start off with 253,381.
It's okay, because we get paid
for doing this. Steve Martin, ladies and gentlemen, buys book, Born Standing Up.
Brilliant. Love him. Brilliant. But be that as it may, but we've got the hour. I don't think I'm going to have to do a breakout session, because I think that broke out.
Well, after 43 takes, I think it's about time we did.
Yeah, I mean, we've been up for like 4 days. It's Wednesday.
Are we at hour six yet?
It just feels like it.
Hour six.
This is, oh, God. Oh, I could have been doing my toenails.
And next on the radio program, Mr. Howard does his toenails. High radio collection.
Ow!
Oh, it's bleeding.
Dude, that's in my eye, man.
I am so sorry. I've been perfecting my
aim.
Style. Yeah. This has been delightful, Jim. Thank you so much.
I've been wanting to have you guys on since we started. And
regret it yet?
No, not at all. We're gonna
have to try harder next time.
I'm gonna be sitting there going, it's like checking all the boxes on the different programs and going, does this have explicit content?
Yeah.
How explicit?
Fuck yeah. I love that word. Don't you love that word?
It's the Swiss Army knife of words. You can just use it at everything.
Man.
It's like,
oh, I got through everything except buggery. No, we just did. All right.
No, I said drudgery earlier, not buggery.
You pick buggery. Your choices.
That's right. Tradition.
Oh, come on. So, from the Virginia... Darn you, Hall Insurance. Anyway.
You do voiceover, don't you?
Yes, I do. From the Virginia Renaissance Festival, this is Renaissance Recall. Brad Howard.
Brian Wendell Morton.
Brian
still.
Wendell Morton. Jim Miller. And this has been a great time. We've had a great time.
It's been fantastic time.
It's awesome. But definitely come out. I'm going to have this up as soon as possible. We're going to have 4 more weekends. Come out, see the guys, enjoy it. I'm going to try to do as many of these recordings as I can and get them out as quickly as possible. But come see us at the Virginia Renaissance Fair at the Lake Anna Winery, VARF.org. That's VARF.org. Definitely come out and play with us. Enjoy the pass, and we'll see you later.
See you in the woods.
See you in the woods. Jim Miller, Renaissance Recall, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Ha! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, ho, you ring-tail sailors, coming up behind. Ho! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
Now, me lads, be of good cheer, for Lundy's Isle, it holds quite near.
here, so it's way down below. And stow your gear,
Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
Ha! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, all your ringtail sailors coming up behind. Ha! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, to keep your tailpiece warm.
Hartland Point's coming up in sight, and the port bow sitting Lundy's light will be stoking up some fires tonight.
Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
Ha! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, all your ringtail sailors coming up behind.
Ho! Jamboree,
ho!
Jamboree, Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
Pilot Cutter's coming up ahead. There'll be no more horse meat or hardtack bread tonight. We'll sleep in your feather bed.
Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
Ha!
Jamboree,
ho!
Jamboree,
all your ringtail sailors coming up behind.
Ho! Jamboree,
ho!
Jamboree, Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
We'll make port by the end of day. We can see the girls standing on the quay. And as we leave, we'll be getting our pay.
So, Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
Ho!
Jamboree!
Ho!
Jamboree!
All your ringtail sailors coming up behind.
Ho! Jamboree!
Ho!
Jamboree!
Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
Several weeks on shore, but a sailor lad, he must roam forevermore. So it's fare thee well to me, Liverpool whore.
Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
Come on!
Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, all your ringtail sailors coming up behind.
Ho!
Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
Look at me now!
Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, all your ringtail sailors coming up behind.
Ho!
Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, Jenny, keep your tailpiece
warm. 1, 2, 3, 4!
Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, all your ringtail sailors coming up behind.
Ho!
Jamboree, ho!
Jamboree,
Jenny, keep your tailpiece.
Jenny, keep your tailpiece
warm. Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
Of coal.
Hey, naughty, naughty!
Hey, Bruno, what's your favorite game?
Well, my favorite game. Well, we play a couple different games. One of the games, my very favorite game is called Carousel. And it's where me and Farfanugan and all his friends, and maybe a couple of my friends, if they remember where I am, to get together and we all carousel. And that means going around in circles on horses. It's really pretty, it's really nice, and I like it. So my favorite game is called Play Carousel.